Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Top of the morning to you.
And our producer is Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, guys. Hi.
Gentlemen, on After Things, we talk about the role of a creative professional, what to expect, how to handle challenges, what to deal with, etc. The couple topical things we could talk about. But Brian, you have a look on your face. You look like a man with a question, like a man who would write in a letter to After Things if you weren't actually a host on After Things.
Okay, you know what? Here, as a matter of fact, I wrote a letter. Let me definitely read it straight from this printed letter that I'm holding in front of me.
Is that A4 paper held sideways? Because it's a very big letter.
It's actually a tabloid sized.
Is it a map? Like, did you have to fold it out like roadmap? Like,
or is it a scroll?
It's a scroll. I'm reading from a scroll. Hey, After Things crew. First time writer, long time co-host with you. My question has to do with what happens.
Skip to the good part as I read it. You read your own thing. Big fan, blah, blah, blah.
So here's my question is when it comes to long-term plans, and I guess I can reveal that this is regarding the long-term plans of the Modern Rogue, there are aspects of where I wanted to be 5 years from now, that at some point you have to get started. And part of it, like right now, the Modern Rogue is a once a week video. And we finally launched an online store or the beginnings of an online store. It has a lot of growing to go through. But part of it was also like, I feel like as a brand, the Modern Rogue can really grow and be something that is a, 20 years from now, an Esquire or Maxim or a Playboy level lifestyle brand. And when I picture it in that far-flung future, or even in the short-flung future, like 5 years from now, I picture it as being a place that has daily content written and, maybe up to 5 videos a week or 3 or whatever, with multiple co-hosts, something that grows beyond just being me and Jason Murphy. And my question is, I did this exercise almost a year ago, and here we are almost a year in, and I'm wondering, when is the right time to begin to dabble in a completely different media than you have been dealing with? Because everything has been just video with just me and Jason. And it won't be, let's say if we were to start a blog or something, it wouldn't be just me and Jason writing all these articles. Clearly, we would need to bring in more people to write more content and all this stuff. And I would love whatever wisdom you have about launching an online blog. Because many people starting a blog think, oh, we'll make the blog, it'll be popular, and then we'll sell advertising on it. But as we've talked about on this show, our format is different enough that that we wouldn't be doing the blog specifically for ad revenue dollars, but more just to create a complete ecosystem that draws more people into watching the videos and gets more people interested in buying, some of the clever gizmos as the Modern Rogue store grows to where it's a lifestyle that you buy into. And I don't know how early is too early to start on another set of content that is not the videos that we've already been doing.
Am I allowed to question the wisdom of that?
Oh, please. By all means.
Did you hear about BuzzFeed's assets or whatever being acquired or whatever?
No. BuzzFeed got acquired?
Are there
Mashable.
Sorry. Yeah. I was thinking of BuzzFeed. Yeah. Mashable. So the problem is, as you talk about, your goal isn't to sell advertising, which is good because there's no money in that.
Right.
Text, articles, things like that are declining considerably as a revenue generator, because also the amount of attention spent on them and time spent on them, it is just a very, 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 very declining area. And so the return on that is minimal. And so, yeah, Ziff Davis bought Mashable. And it's just, and there was a big push, you know, 10 years ago and stuff where blog networks are growing, sprouting up everywhere. But you look at like Huffington Post, all this, they're not making much ad revenue. Ad revenue is dying. Ad revenue is basically going to video and places where you can put video stuff. Okay. So in your model is, hey, we sell stuff. We do cool things with like, you know, what you're doing with Modern Rogue products, things like this. You want a funnel, right? So your goal is to create a funnel for that. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's part of it. But basically looking to expand into shareable resources of different varieties. Video is delightful and lucrative in many ways, but also very limited as far as its shareability. There's a big difference. If somebody says, take a look at this and it's an article, I will almost certainly skim it. If it's a video, I will think, do I have 5 minutes I want to invest in this? No, I do not. And I will not even open it. So it occurs to me that a lot of what we've done on the Modern Rogue already could be broken out into articles describing all the stuff we did and creating a bigger, more robust resource for people to experience the exact same thing, just in a totally different way.
I mean, maybe. I guess my question is, how much will that, like, I get is writing books and stuff, you know, the conventional wisdom is, you know, write books, do blog posts, do stuff like this to sort of drive people to your books. The evidence that I saw that really works was minimal versus, and the problem is, it's like, it's easy to say, like, you know, it's easier for me to read a thing and be interested in a thing than it is for me to watch a video, but also if they watch the video, they're really pre-qualified to be really more engaged in doing this. I have this sort of very, as a funnel, I don't know. I think that's the way the internet worked 10 years ago. I don't know now. And I look at people that create networks of content sort of stuff. And I kind of think that, like, if, you know, I look at, like, I watch a lot of Adafruit videos and stuff because I do a lot of tech stuff. And they have a lot of different people who work for them doing different projects and things like this. And they do different kinds of content. You know, Rhett and Link, you know, the way they've expanded into video laterally across the way because they realize, oh, people who like us for this, they'll like us for this totally unrelated thing, but they like our personalities. My concern is just as a time sink. It's just the amount of time that you spend putting together that content versus I like the idea of expanding it into a bigger enterprise, but all the enterprises you named are having tremendous financial problems in part because they're tied to print or whatever. And so I would almost think that just, you know, I would kind of think that doubling down into video in different ways, you know, less intensive ways.
Oh, yeah, that's tough because we're already so maxed out on bandwidth. And I mean, I guess we could unlock bandwidth by bringing more video stuff, but it just seems like.
Or people.
What's that?
Or people. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, why don't you, like, I could think of, like, I know a guy who's really good, you know, John Park. He's a good guy picking locks, things like this, technical kind of guy like this. I would go to a guy like that and say, hey, we want to sponsor, you know, a once a week show from you. We want to sponsor a show. We want to sponsor, you know, we want to produce or buy content from you. You go do this, this, this. We'll give you these resources to make it happen. I think that the bottleneck is you and Jason. You know, if you're saying all we have to do, but I'm saying, like, if all of those things they have in common is they're people running groups of other people creating content from them.
So, yes, and I think that part of the challenge that Brian has now is not only the creation of the content, because I think it's safe to say, right, Brian, that if the Modern Rogue relied on you creating the content, like Scam School relies on you creating the content, that the Modern Rogue wouldn't exist. You know, Jason is somebody that it does a tremendous amount of writing and researching, and that's really his, in terms of the episode mapping out. So I think you have brought on people. Modern Rogue is an example of you expanding into more video stuff. But right now, you guys are also beyond coming up with the videos. You guys are kind of just as a machine, as a production house, maxed out on, you know, time and hours from your staff. Right.
Well, and plus on top of that, we've done a little bit of asking for feedback from the audience, and the audience, much to my surprise, pushed some segment of the audience pushed back at the idea of going three times a week or more than once a week. Like a lot of people are saying, like, no, I like one good show per week and I don't want any more.
I hear you, and I guess, but the problem is we're trying to talk about part of the audience that you don't have yet. Now, I know my friend Jordan Gold, who, when we have time, we do Magic Club, right? Jordan's an expert on cards, card technique, goes to Gathering for Gardner, stuff like that. Were I in your shoes, I would think to go to a guy like him and say, okay, you know, you can be our card guy, our card or magic paraphernalia guy, and you produce, you go do once a week a thing, whatever. We run our ads on there, or we do this, or it's part of our network. I get you're limited in part of your bottleneck, but it's also been your greatest resource there. And that tells me the thing that's really working is expand that. I'm not saying you doing more modern rogue shows, but it might be the modern cardist, you know, then pulls that audience into what you're doing. Is you've only begun to tap the potential audience, a small percentage part of that. Of that. And either you're talking about one thing to serve people you already have or to pull people in.
Oh, no. I don't think it's to serve. I mean, I guess there would be an ancillary benefit to serve people who are already in the ecosystem. But basically, right now we're creeping up just under 100 episodes of the Modern Rogue. And during that, if you want to break it all out, there's probably if all you did was mine and convert the entire back catalog of Modern Rogue episodes into chunks of blog content, there's probably 150 to 200 chunks of blog content, because oftentimes we'll combine three or four methods of a thing in a single episode or whatever. It seems like that right now we're relying on one platform on YouTube, and we're relying on one audience that will sometimes like what we're doing, sometimes not like what we're doing. So it's like there's episodes, you know, there's some people who just never click on the drink episodes because they're like, well, I don't drink, I'm not old enough, or whatever the reason is. And so as a result, that's the limiting factor on how many people we reach. It seems like even if all I did was unlock all of those aha moments, all of those takeaways. For example, you know, when someone types in spicy margarita, they probably will find a recipe on one site. And then, you know, three or four items down, they'll find our video on making a Texas spicy margarita. It seems like rather than saying, oh, well, we're video and they're print. Meanwhile, the print guys are going to get, you know, because what people want is the recipe, they're going to go straight to it. It seems like having a blog post for all of these chunks would only act as a funnel to gravitate more people into the black hole of falling into the episodes.
It may very well. I guess in the metrics I've seen for like how well those posts and stuff, one, trying to promote the platform to get it there, then serve as a feed to the thing or whatever. I understand, you know, the goal. I'm going from a position of I don't know, and what I have seen has been
sure.
Man, I guess what I'm saying is like you have a thing that works really well. How do you take that thing and do it? And I get there's the resource. I'm just thinking like, oh, could you get a good again expanding? I mean, like bringing somebody else. Like, let's get somebody to do Instagram, you know, channels for us. You know, like, you know, let's go laterally in these things.
And that's part of it as well, because nothing about the YouTube environment lends itself particularly well to any kind of article stuff. But meanwhile, as you and I have discussed before, I've been obstinately refusing to put energy into the Facebook side of things because I resent the fact that they keep, you know, that they duped me over and over and over again. But of course, that's not a good long-time strategy, is to hold a grudge. Meanwhile, if there's somebody that could build a Modern Rogue Facebook channel with versions of all the videos that had subtitles on it so that people could, scrolling past it, suddenly get seduced into following along, whether there's audio or not, and then also, you know, once, twice, or thrice weekly articles breaking apart, like, you know, here's how to make a homemade PVC blowgun pipe thing or whatever. Like, that's a platform that I do feel I could cause people to drift into our orbit. And I know for a fact that I and nobody on my team right now wants to take responsibility for that. And I guess that's part of the reason I'm wondering if some kind of written component and somebody who is familiar with that territory wouldn't be a good thing to add.
I don't know. I mean, I don't have, I just, you know, the landscape has changed so much for me. The
problem with this is also like, you are describing a problem. you are drawing an outline that looks very suspiciously like the solution that you have. And obviously this is very early in these kinds of conversations. So correct. We don't want to talk about it, but it's like, I know Andrew does not, to bring you guys behind the curtain, I know where Brian is going. Brian is, but we're kind of doing shadow theater of what Brian has in mind. Andrew does not. So I think what
that's
Andrew,
that's kind of what's exciting about this discussion for me, but keep going.
So yeah, well, I mean, I guess, but at the end of the day, it really, we're not going to really get much of anywhere because like Andrew's right. Look, the idea, because I wouldn't even describe it as blog content, what you really want and what I think that you are talking about. Like, yes, it will probably be on a web page somewhere so it can be indexed by Google. But like you said, this is more social media, richer social media content than it is what we did with iTrix, which was like, hey, we want to do a blog and we want to update our blog 5 times a day and we want to make sure that we tend to good comments section. Like that, that journey that started in 2006, right, is nowhere near what you want to do right now in terms of the like.
Not where I'm. Again, I don't know what he's trying to do. I'm looking at it from the high level, looking at media companies right now and why they're all driving to video, why they're getting away from written content. Why the push in that world is away from content to video. And I prefer to read articles. I prefer that myself to stuff. But that push as far as like in the ad stuff, that's where I'm not putting my own experiences into this. I'm putting in every time I read about a blog or media, something that does textual based stuff, why there's a steady decline for that, because the cost to produce that versus other stuff. That's just from my.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, although I do think that like those things, those empires are crumbling because display ads are falling off a map and all advertising is owned by Google and Facebook.
Yeah. And you know, I'm looking at people who sell physical things and seeing how are they trying to move and how do they do it. And I see them, the people who sell stuff and create content to do that, why they keep trying to figure out ways to create. That's why I brought up Adafruit and stuff, why they're trying to do More video, you know. So without knowing what you're really trying to go, I have no way to answer that other than what other people are doing.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we could leave it. We could leave it there. I guess my general question is, let's say regardless of the specifics of where I am, if I had a 5-year vision and now 1 year after having that vision, I suddenly find myself with an opportunity to start at it. I guess what I'm really weighing is the how much do you decide to gamble with what resources you have? You know, like how soon is too soon to move into the next phase of what your target is for a 5-year
goal? I'll apply to you a hypothetical that we'll be vague about, but you both know that I'm involved in right now. Where okay. I've been presented a gift of an opportunity in the middle of a bunch of other things that is an amazing, amazing opportunity. Now, funding, everything, whatever for this kind of thing. And my deciding factor on to pursue it or not at each step of the way is, can I find the people and the talent to do it? Because I could say yes and say, yes, I'm going to do this thing and tell the people that I want to do it and convince them. And then all of a sudden have all the money I need to make this thing happen. But if I don't have the people to pull it off and make it work right, and I don't have the bandwidth to do it, then it's a disaster. So it's my bandwidth plus recruiting the talent that I need for it. And for me, it's finding people. So my life the last week or so has been spent talking to people, different people, like somebody like this, they're sort of what I could use for here. But if I get them in the fold, then they'll be good for this, whatever. for you, I think that there are opportunities there. If you know that you have the bandwidth and the people to pull it off, then yeah, then you do it. You'll figure out. You need a team. If you got the team and your team you have isn't too stressed out with everything else you're trying to do.
Right. Well, and that's the real question is all of a sudden, you know, what happens when you find yourself with the opportunity to expand your team ahead of the schedule that you thought was going to happen? And it's like,
yeah, if you got the people and you got the money, then yeah.
Okay.
Again, without knowing.
I know. This is what's fascinating. This is really, really good to hear. It's not often that I get to play Shark Tank on our own show and go up and vaguely
pick
something.
I've had some other stuff I've never talked about, you know, public. I've talked to you guys, right? Like, I've had stuff. I mean, I had to turn down a TV special a couple years ago because the turnaround time was too fast. And I could have gotten everything done, but the network was like, we need this done by this. We're like, can you cut checks in this period of time? Can you cut checks in this window? And they're like, oh, no, we'd have to do like, you know, next, it'd have to be like 4 months or this or whatever. And I didn't want to put out personally, you know, and with my partners, you know, $500,000 to foot the bill because Marcy in accounting's on vacation, you know, and I had to say, no. And that was a couple of years ago. I had to say no to a special with, you know, a very, very well-known network, you know, because it was like they already got this. They had a little hole in the slot. They went to me like, we'd love to be able to go do this. Can you do this? I'm like, yeah, I can do this. This, like, great. I'm like, you would need to pay us this much first so we can go get everything. And we're like, oh, well, you know, it was just an idea, you know. So I've had that happen. After I did my show, Don't Trust Andy Romaine, I got offered to go do the Blaine had done a tour in Asia and it did great, great. Right. So all of a sudden they want to bring more American magicians over there. And my TV show had just aired all over Asia. Mm-hmm. Like, we want you to come do a tour. We want you to come do a tour. I'm like, great. I talked to a organization of which I have a continuous relationship business-wise from it. And I won't say that it's an agency or not. I'm like, hey, can you recommend somebody who could put this together? And they couldn't come up with anybody. Couldn't come up with anybody. Because I'm like, I need a tour producer or whatever to do this. And they couldn't come up with anybody. And they're like, well, who do you know? I'm like, I know people, but it's like this and that. And it was just, I could have put a thing together and I could have said yes. And I could have made a lot of money, but it would not have been done right.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that because I didn't have the person in place to do this. And theoretically, the people that should have been able to help me find that were.
Well, the mere fact that the core of your opinion appears to be like if you have the talent and you believe in the talent, then yes. is exactly what I was hoping to get out of that. So yep. So I guess to make it more of a general after things topic, there's nothing more precious than people who understand the voice of what you're trying to do and are willing to carry the ball for any segment. If you're an entertainer and it's an agent who actually gets and likes your show and understands how to market it, that is the most valuable resource on the planet, is other people's attention and creative efforts in alignment with where you're trying to head.
Yeah. Yep. Agree. So I look forward to a sometime when you have time, you telling me what the hell you're talking about. So
we'll do our after show that only Patreon platinum ebony thrice uranium members get to hear.
This is a joke.
So I have a question that it is not at all been talked out that you guys probably haven't even really thought about. And I'd love to hear your take on it. Have you heard of this little thing going on with Patreon?
Oh yeah. We can speculate wildly about how this is going to shake out.
Yeah, Justin, I think has had to do marathon live sessions on this and whatnot.
I did the call-in show I do on Fridays, which is usually like a 2 to 3 hour stream, was pretty much all about it, and really that was me trying to make up for the fact that Bryce was basically our PR. He was our press secretary in the hardcore, the hardest of the hardcores on our Discord, who are very confused as they should be. No, this was I sectioned it out into me being very negative and me being very positive, and that was my negative incarnation.
let me give a little backstory. So we've talked about this before. One of my criticisms of the Patreon system of yore was I think that getting that monthly big fat bill can sometimes be intimidating. That's when you see a lot of people drop off if they're you know, if they're paying for a bunch of people. And I'd said, you know, it would be great, would be an alternative system where you could bill people separately. Cause if somebody's paying $20 a month for your show or whatever, then let them just see that bill instead of $100, $150, like set like a white label way to sell individual, to sell in, you know, to have people be billed individually. So it's not like one big fat cable subscription thing. So you can sell it individually. That was my, I repeatedly said, I think that would be a great idea. I would love this to be. And I first heard what Patreon's doing. I'm like, oh, this sounds great. And then I looked at the deal and I'm like, no, that's not what I meant. So what happened is Patreon's moved to a model like that on the surface where basically like shows get, if you sponsor a show, pay for a show, you get billed, you know, separately. So each show is a set, but it's a separate credit card transaction, separate everything for it, which is good when it's like $5-$10 a month or whatever kind of thing. But if it's a weekly kind of thing, or if it's a dollar level commitment, then I'm paying a dollar to support your show. Great. Well, plus, you know, the 30% credit card fee plus this percentage, blah, blah, blah. So now I have to pay $1.38 or whatever. It is not optimum.
So the reason they're doing this is because what we're doing, as best I'm able to understand on the periphery, and I would say there's a good chance I'm the least informed of everyone on the panel here.
But yeah, I know. Brian was off on vacation in New York, having a whole nother immersive, emotional, hardworking experience. While off in the distance, it's like, does that smell like chicken? Oh, it's the burning flesh in the kingdom that I came from.
Yeah, but it sounds as though what they're trying to fix is the rampant problem of people making patronage just long enough to reap all of the insider benefits and then peace out, not keeping their obligations on a monthly basis.
This is a feature that they have called charge up front.
Yes.
Which they have...
What was previously optional, right?
It is optional, and it seems like it's available to a lot of people, but I don't really know why they're taking so long to roll it out to people. But yeah, Patreon's long-term goal that they stated during one of these updates was like, we want to make it so that you have charge up front for everybody, and that people can't just, you know, like you were saying, kind of
make promises and then not really keep them.
The other thing was that double billing.
That was the thing. Is that the charge up front became its own problem, because then it was like, okay, well, I just subscribed on the 28th. Why am I getting charged again on the 1st?
Right.
So I've gotten double dipped, and that caused them to get a lot of support tickets and complaints. That like, this is BS, like I didn't even get a full month, and so now it's all right, well, how do we solve that going forward? Well, then let's bill you on your anniversary. Okay, well, if we're billing you on your anniversary, then maybe doing group charging isn't great. Also, that's not really great for exclusive content in general, and from what Andrew said, like, for there is a creeping a problem of like these Patreon bills in general are getting higher and higher. So they're like, okay, so what we'll do is we'll charge everybody for everything, and because we're creator friendly, we will, based on our interactions with patrons, we will shift the credit card and the processing fee to them. So all creators will now have a very simple 95% of what their number is that they will take home.
Yeah, if you're spending $10 a month to support shows you like, now 35%, you have to pay 35% more to keep paying them roughly the same amount between credit card.
It depends how you're supporting them.
Because if you're doing 10 shows at a buck or something like that.
Yeah.
Because the big part of that new fee is 2.9% plus 35 cents for every pledge. So if now, it's once a month, that's 35 cents on top of that existing pledge.
One of the ad hoc solutions that we seem to be seeing internally on our side is a bunch of people taking their pledge from $1 per episode, and then they up it to $4 per episode, and I have to assume they're setting a $4 monthly cap on there so that they're only paying for the first episode of the month, and then they've hit their max, and then that way they're only getting a 35-cent ding on
it. Explain to me why they didn't just, like, the charge up front, like oh, okay, to get access to this content, pay for, if it's a weekly, pay for your first month up front, and then you'll get billed in a month for everything on that.
Well, that does seem like that's something they should have done. Because they do that with paid posts.
Well, and all of this makes a lot more sense if everybody is pledging per month. But
no, that's an episode one. Like, you pay for your first five episodes first to get, like, if you pay in advance for five episodes, you get full access.
Yeah, well, there's no way to set, like, say, hey, we're per creation and we expect to have X amount per month. There's no, like, system field.
No, what I'm saying is, like, if you're doing an if I'm paying per episode, like, you know, like weird things per episode, okay? If I'm Patreon, we can say, all right, who do you want to have access to everything? Like, oh, if they've bought five episodes, paid for five, then they get access to everything. So you could upfront say, let me pay for my first five episodes. Boom, congratulations, you get access to everything. And then after the fifth episode, we'll start billing you, you know, like internet service, or after the first 6 months, you're paying for this, for, you get this price there or whatever. I mean, I assure you on paper, it's simple. I mean, it's the idea, like, pay for the first five up front, get access to all that. Then we'll start billing you after those five episodes or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that there's the unknowns here are exactly where they want to go, because this seems to be tied to other decisions that they are making. And part of it is that they are going to get rid, full stop, of batch payments. That they want everything to be transacted right there on the spot, which puts money in creators' hands faster. And that's why they are building in these fees now. This is according to Jack Conte's blog update on Thursday or Friday, I forget.
It just kills that dollar level, you know, and that's the problem. I think that, you know, there is a very interesting alternate history of the internet going back to the early 1990s, which you looked at when they were trying to settle, like, which sort of protocols to use for, like, how to do, like, HTTP requests, et cetera, and the World Wide Web protocols. And there was this one idea, which was to make it easier to put everything behind kind of a wall, which was problematic. The internet, wow, the internet should be open. But then it was going to be very – then there. But along with that was, then you could create a transaction system to be able to 5 cents for this article, 10 cents for this or whatever, just sort of, you know, because, you know, we like, oh, the internet's free. No, it's not. Somebody's paying the bill, and you're paying the bill with your attention span, which is being grossly undervalued versus what, you know, we demand a minimal living wage. Well, you know, how much time have you lost watching stupid ads that, you know, are being resold at, that if you could have just paid for that content to begin with, you would be happier. But in many cases, maybe not. But anyway, I digress. Point is microtransactions. PayPal actually has a way to do microtransactions where they reduce the cost per, you can do dollar transactions with it. It's buried deep within the PayPal API, but there's ways to do $1 purchases, $2 purchases don't incur the $30 charges. And there's ways to make this sort of stuff happen. But everybody got sort of locked into the whole mindset of, you know, the way things work. So, like, yeah, micropayment fees. Click on fixed fee for that. So you have – it's a 5 cents fixed fee, so it's only 10 cents. I think if you go to the U.S. – what does it say? Like,
they actually don't
ends up being like 5% plus like a 5 cent fee, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, 5 cent fee.
Oh, yeah.
U.S. dollar.
U.S. dollar 5 cent fee.
So it's 10 cents. So there's a way to do it via the PayPal system through the API to say, okay, you want to make a dollar pledge, great. You get 90 cents of that dollar versus 65 cents or whatever. And I put it down to laziness and stuff, because I've talked to people who do, you know, some of the payment systems, things like this. I'm like, why don't you, like, oh, I'm not familiar with the API. And then so somebody tells corporate, or somebody tells us in many instances, like, no, you can't be done. It can be done. I built a secret thing. I built an entire system out of curiosity on top of whole micropayments thing as sort of a publishing thing based upon that, which would solve so many problems. I mean, not my solution, but just the idea of, oh, the dollar pledge.
Sure. Sure.
We're going to see where this shakes out. The reaction has been bad. I think that there is damage, not, you know, the damage that can't be repaired, but there is damage done to the Patreon brand now that was not there a week and a half ago. But, you know, again, we don't know, we don't know exactly where they want to go in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 10 years. Right. And you are seeing what I think is kind of the biggest bummer is that Patreon, which to me, the greatest thing the Patreon gave to us was the name brand of how to do this thing. And it was safe. It was a bank. It was just, oh, you do it through here. You're not, no one's like, oh, Patreon, are they going to steal my credit card? Is this a weird site? No. It became very quickly a trusted resource for crowdfunding. And now it's like, oh, well, why, like now I'd like to support you, but please tell me somewhere else to support you because I don't agree with Patreon, or I don't think that Patreon has your best interest at heart, and I'm a fan, and I want you to support something else. So, like, that's hard, and it sucks. And right now, I'm watching all these things come in, like people are hacking their pledges so they can keep pledging but not pay four fees, which they shouldn't. Sometimes five fees for weekly patrons like us. And it's like, I know that they're less than what they were before because I can see that math, and it totally screws all my rewards. Like I had exclusive content rewards that now are just totally meaningless because it was meant to be, hey, you're doing this per week, and now they're doing it for 1 week. Also, the number that's on my site is totally worthless. Like,
yeah.
It is just a complete fabrication.
Well, and that's the toughest thing as a creator is trying to figure out, like, well, are we in a good place or a bad place? What are the actual numbers? Because they had already sort of tweaked those to be best estimates of what the give or take home for the creator was going to be. But now that everybody's playing kind of off book in placing their pledges, it's, you're right, it's nonsense.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because obviously, you know, we've talked about ways to improve the system or whatever, but you have a case like when I opened up Skype today, I every time they do a change on it, it gets worse. Like now I can't scale the size of the window. I either have this normal little vertical thing here or this full screen thing. And I, you know, Brian mentioned something like they're trying to make it like Snap or something like that, which, you know, it's funny because like that's Snap, which is going through a huge redesign because it's become too problematic and too difficult to use, et cetera. And there's sometimes people like, oh, this thing's working. Let's go do this. In a case of Patreon, it's like, is this a case of where, hey, maybe they should have been very proactive. This is what we want to do. Let's have conversations. The conversations they're having now seem like ones they should have had before this launched.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so spoiler alert, there's going to be an open letter. That's yeah. being drafted, and
wait, by you or by Jack Conte?
by people who are upset by the move.
Yeah.
So I will assume I don't know if word even reached you, right? But I assume that your name will be on it. My name is on it. And there's a few other big prominent people whose name is on it, effectively saying what we're saying right now.
Yeah, I'm totally ignorant of this. I've not received, or maybe I haven't opened the right email.
Yeah, it was born from a Slack. Anyway, it's I don't know if how much we want to put out there before, but like
most would be a very open letter.
It's and there's a lot of people who make a lot of money for Patreon that are going to be on it, in my opinion, you know, and it's like. I don't know. They've been chatty at times. I mean, Patreon has gotten back to my emails, and allegedly I'm going to have a phone call with them this week, but a lot of people have had phone calls with them last week and this week, and it's not like anything has changed. It sucks. I think that the one thing that will never come back is the idea that, like, oh, Patreon's this cool place where I can feel safe. And, like, I think at a certain point that, you know, if the fans are happy with it and things are growing, that'll be there. But for right now, I do think that there was a huge mistake of them just kind of dropping this and pretending and hiding behind the idea of, well, we've done the math and we talked to creators and we talked to patrons and they're all into it. You know? Doesn't seem like it now, because all my patrons are super pissed off and all the creators I talk to have lost, you know, hundreds at times for the bigger accounts, hundreds of patrons and dollars and you know, one person that I know that makes a fairly large amount on Patreon was like, look, I don't think that there's any reason to think that they're going to come back. You know, those people that just are spurned by the platform.
Yeah.
Like, why do they, like, because they're going to get an email from Patreon? No, they won't. They're going to hope that they continue to pay attention and they're going to trust me to say, don't worry, guys, everything's all cool. Come on back. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. But if, like, right now, you're seeing the vitriol on some of this, where it's like, this is a VC thing. This is Patreon doing a money grab. They're finding, like, old blog posts from, like, their growth manager talking about how it's the bigger accounts that move the wheel, not the smaller accounts. It's bad now.
And that's, I'm going to tell you, you know, two fundamental problems. One, it was disingenuous. Like, now creators get 95%, which is flat out not
that true. That was a tactical, huge slip up for them to try to casually paint this as an improvement and a superior.
Yeah, he was like, oh, okay, that $1 pledge, did you get 5% plus the 30? What's the credit card fee they're charging, 30 or 30 cents?
It's like 5 and 5. So basically you got 90% of whatever.
Wait, only like, oh, 5% of it. Yeah, so you're getting a...
It was 5% to Patreon and about 5% for processing.
So it's not a flat fee, like a 30 cents per charge?
It was not previously.
Because it depended on the level of the person's pledge and the method that they were pledging with, whether it was through Stripe or through PayPal.
Right.
So it's not like a minimum 30 cent charge. Like, what is a person, if I want to pledge a dollar?
Under the new system or the old system?
Yeah, right, the new one.
The new one, it would be $1.38.
So there's the 30 cent crest. That's what I'm getting at. There's the percentage plus the flat 30 cent per charge.
2.9% plus 35 cents for each creation. So that would mean
they're not even at a 0.29 credit card fee, which is kind of BS. So anyhow, that's another thing.
By the way, real quick, for example, Dead Polymers in the chat says, I dropped all my Patreons. I'll do Twitch or YouTube subscriptions instead. Understand, if you think that you're not enough of your money is getting to the creators through Patreon, then you're insane to think that anything worth value is going through Twitch. Twitch is a 50-50 split. So if 35 cents on the dollar is you know, an inappropriate fee, then do not delude yourself into thinking like, well, now I'm doing Twitch subscriptions, because that's dog crap money as far as a percentage to the provider.
So yeah, so on that, the point I was getting to, like that 95%. Oh, 95%. Okay, so if somebody's paying a dollar pledge, they're now paying $1.38. What percentage is 95 cents of that? And I think that's more closer to 60. It's like, yeah, disingenuous there. That's problematic. It was getting to another point, but. It's just, yeah, subscription services, by the way, guys. Yeah, those things don't pay out very well at all. They're just problematic. No bueno. That's a frustrating, again, I'm just, and I always just say, like, the bigger, like, yeah, the bigger clients where the money is. This is, that's, and to me, in the internet, that is the wrong thinking. Yahoo was like, you know what? If you don't have an ad budget of more than $5,000 a month, don't even talk to us, because you're not worth our time. Google said, you know, we could probably make $10 a month work, you know, if we automate it. You know, if you figure out how to take advantage of the smaller end, it is much bigger than everything else. And that Patreon was like going, yeah, those dollar things aren't working. Dollar's a magic number for people to contribute. It's a magic number. There's a reason Apple was like, we want 99-cent songs. We want content at this price. There is a reason there are dollar stores and all this. And if you cannot get that model to work with the existing infrastructure and stuff, and there are ways to do it, even within, say, hey, you know, well, you know, you get billed $10 a month, whatever. If you're trying to run away from that, you're running away from the money. You're running away from the real growth and the real area, because you're saying, hey, to the smaller creators, we don't need you. Where were smaller creators today are the big creators of tomorrow, and the fans that are here are going to be there. And that's just
I'll tell you what, up. I don't even like Facebook, right? But I've got a couple Facebook pages. Facebook finds me on my phone whenever I post anything, and it's just like, hey, you got a buck? You just want to give me a buck? And I'll just throw it out to more people. You want a buck? It's a buck. Hey, it's a buck. Come on, man. What's the deal? It's Facebook. Like, they're hunting for it. And you're right. Google. Exactly. Again, and these are the people that killed advertising. All of advertising is dead because of these companies, because they're like, microtransactions will add up to macro. Like, it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been hoping and praying that my Christmas wish will come true. All I want is that sad-faced Jack Conte YouTube video where he explains that they screwed up and they are putting this on hold so they can review it going forward. Because beyond that, man, like, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm always going to have Patreon, but it's like, it's hard. It's hard with a straight face to just be like, yeah, no, this is the new way that you should do it. And for me, I'm not going to go into all the email correspondence I've had with them, but I asked them straight out, are you guys pushing me to a different model? Like, because this seems like you're punishing me right now. You are for being
per creation. Like there are people who theoretically could be doing new creations every single day, and instead of 31 dollar pledges being bundled up at the end of the month and having only a tiny fee associated, this insistence that each one needs to be a microtransaction with a 35% or 35-cent fee on top of it, problematic.
Yeah. And it's like, and they told me straight out, no, this is not what we're trying to do. We are not trying to kill per creation. And it's like, well, then, you know, the cure is worse than the disease, dog.
Well, I'm still hung up on that 35-cent credit card transaction, because I get better terms. If you're taking 5% of this, I can get better terms. Any one of us can get 29-cent credit card transaction fee using Stripe or whatever. And then if we're at a certain other level and we're willing to handle a certain amount of chargebacks or whatever like that, that actually creeps lower. That's, to me, I see that. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, well, this is our fee on this. And I'm like, I know that's not the real fee. You've just added on, you know, 12% or whatever percentage to that. Now you're lying to me and I don't trust you, because you have no problem telling me this is what it costs when I know that's not. I go through this a lot with like vendors and certain stuff, like, oh yeah, no, this is the thing. I'm like, take a higher percentage over here and I will trust you. Try to hide it over here. I don't trust you an inch.
Well, I think I'm hearing you loud and clear, and I agree. People should go to patreon.com/weirdthings and support this show. Just $1 an episode, or $4 an episode, and set your limit monthly to $4.
Or just PayPal us the money. And it's funny, because like people, like a lot of people like PayPal, which is true, but a lot of the frustration from PayPal came because they were so consumer focused. And if you were selling something and there was a question that you didn't, you know, send a state, you know, a shipping order ID or whatever, PayPal would defer to the customer, because customers, like, there are far more people buying stuff than selling stuff. And if we lose somebody selling stuff, there'll be somebody else willing to sell it. But people willing to buy stuff, they're not saying they didn't make mistakes and they haven't been slow to adapt or whatever. But that's a lot of it. Whenever you're like, oh, PayPal, like, what? Well, they held these funds for me for this. And I had a very funny thing where I had a vendor once pay me like a $50,000 deposit, which cleared, went through PayPal. I deposited it, got it through there. And I got a nervous call from PayPal security like 3 days later, like, yeah, we need to know what this is for. And I'm like, why? And it was a magic project. I'm like, why? Well, because you actually technically shouldn't have been authorized. I'm like, well, it was. And I have the money now. You know, well, really, I need you to sign, put this thing together to tell me. I'm like, I don't think I need to do that. I really don't think I need to do this thing. And then it was just this, you know, they thought I was, you know, I'm like, why don't you talk to the person who paid it if you have a problem? I'm like, well, we don't, like, because they're your vent, you know, like they're big, was a big corporation. I mean, it was just this funny fear in there, and like, you know, I'll help you a little bit. Like, we need to know what it is. Like, I'm a magician. I can't tell you what it's for.
Oh, then, what a great fallback position.
Yeah.
You want to talk picks real quick?
Surely.
Bryce cut together this interview that I did with Nate Staniforth, and I just am so pleased with it. Mainly when I'm on Scam School, I'm loud and screamy and over the top. But this was an opportunity to try to match Nate Staniforth, who's a very talented magician's energy. And we talked for about 30 minutes about his new upcoming book, Here Is Real Magic. And more importantly, about his philosophy of magic. And I think that it scales to anybody who has a creative endeavor that they adore and they fear what their life will be like should they become disillusioned with it. And I think that's the part that's made me the most proud. Much like the letter that Teller wrote to me 20 years ago reaches outside of the world of magic and instead feels important to other artistic endeavors. I think this is how this interview with Nate Staniforth goes. If you go to Scam School and just type in Nate Staniforth, you'll see it's titled Nate Staniforth, Here Is Real Magic. I think you'll like it. And also, he's got a cool idea for a trick that he's trying to open source. And anyone who pre-orders his new book, Here's Real Magic, will get the intro video explaining this new magic technique that he's trying to put together.
Sweet.
My pick is I finished Future Man on Hulu. It was it's a bit uneven, but I really liked it. It was fun, and obviously I think it's at its best when it is this kind of gleeful hodgepodge of time traveler tropes, it's very, very fun, and it takes some really, really kooky turns by the end.
That was one of my favorite parts of The Disaster Artist, is seeing how many of the same actors were there from Future Man. Both.
It's a Rogan Goldberg thing.
Correct. Yeah. So Seth Rogen is in there, and but also the guy who owns the video game store with the Gap Tooth,
Paul Shearer. Yeah,
Paul Shearer, and then also the guy who plays Josh Futterman is a major character in.
That's great.
He was in Disaster Artist.
He was the kid with the basketball playing 12-year-old kid.
Oh, that was him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and what Bonnie was the one. Bonnie was the one who spotted it, and once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's pretty great. Huh. when they're diving into bed and rolling around together and
Denny,
all that stuff. Yeah,
Denny, that classic name, Denny.
A quick shout out, by the way, Paste Magazine listed the 50 best book covers of the year. And a gentleman named M.S. Corley, who was the cover designer for The Naturalist was like number 5 or 6 on there.
Wow. That's great. Yeah.
So it was
cool.
Funny. It's like Amazon PR, sent me, congratulations, Andrew Main, for having The Naturalist cover name, da, da, da. And I quickly retweeted and I said, congratulations to M.S. Corley, and put his hashtag in there. For designing the amazing cover. I got this, you know, the designs were amazing. I had a typographical suggestion, minor things. The credit's all his. And that was really 30 best. Yeah. 30 best book covers of 2017. So quickly complimented and made
that's,
a point.
That's so great. It's been so much fun to see The Naturalist just take the hell off. It's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. My pick, I watched this the other night. I haven't watched this in a few years, and it is a fun, it is a docudrama. It was presented as a documentary. The things in there were not all true and were sort of, you know, stories and all that, but it was a very interesting sort of, exploration based on the book Pumping Iron. This is the movie Pumping Iron. Ever seen it?
Oh, geez.
Back in the 70s, the Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle.
No, it's too slow on that. Sorry. Yeah, it was the training of like the 100 days leading up to the Mr. Olympia, Mr. Universe contest, the 1975 Mr. Olympia. Mr. Universe is the amateur. Mr. Olympia is the pro. And you have Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno, Mike Katz, Serge Nubre, a lot of these kind of the golden era of bodybuilding as it became big. And it's this interesting sort of behind the scenes. It's Arnold's like 28, 27. He hasn't done a major movie role at this time, but he kind of plays the sort of it's presented as real, presented as them, but the stories are sort of kind of, apocryphal or whatever, and things are edited to sort of add more sort of drama to it. But it's a lot of great quotable Iron Schwarzenegger, lines from there. But, masses of people are, swearing him from autograph, like, Arnold, do you drink skim milk? No. Do you drink milk? Like, no, milk is for babies. I drink beer. But you see that personality there in that. But as a documentary from the 1970s, it's also kind of neat stylistically from that point of view too. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now. So,
right on.
Nice little throwback in time. Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.